Hello, and welcome to a very mobile episode of At Your End Step. My name is Morgan, and I'm here with Mike.
Ogak.
We have another fun foot episode for you folks this week. We are actually driving to Gen Con, which is the best 4 days in gaming, from what I understand.
No, I'm driving to Gen Con. Everyone else in the car is just along for the ride. So,
I mean, for liability purposes, do you really want that recorded on a podcast? Guess we're going with it, but okay.
I mean, I'm not. I'm just talking.
That's
true. Talk to myself a lot while I'm driving anyways, so that actually might be the one I don't want recorded.
we do have a friend, Justin, in the car. He's not mic'd up currently, but you might overhear him. We might have to reemphasize some points that he makes that are good ones.
You might overhear him, and then you'll hear the screaming pain when I hit him with a shocker. cattle prod.
We definitely wanted to we wanted to get an episode for you folks this week, just because obviously a lot happened. We had a lot of stuff happening with the judge community. We had the MC in Barcelona. We had there was a GP as well in Barcelona, and then and then we had the Star City Games Open in Columbus. So we definitely want to talk about all those things. So before we get started, I do want to give a quick shout out to all of our patrons. Thank you so much for contributing to our show every time we release an episode. You can find out more about our Patreon at patreon.com/@yourendstep.
I'm assuming they're the reason we have these cool travel mics now.
Yeah, most certainly.
So.
And moving on to our community topics. So we have the big announcement, the big thing to really talk about is the Judge Academy. So the judging program as it stands, as we know it, is going to be fundamentally changing a little bit.
It's going to cease to exist. I want you to understand, it's not fundamentally changing. It's gone.
Sure.
So
as Mike said, it's going to be gone. What's replacing it is something called the Judge Academy. And the Judge Academy is sort of a source for certification for not only Magic judges, but there's going to be, I think, Keyforge and then other various games going forward. They're going to be using it as a resource for certification of judging staff, basically.
Yeah, the Judge Academy is also responsible for giving out things like the Judge Oscars, the Judge Grammys, the Judge Tonys.
I mean,
the Judge Emmys.
They are going to be responsible for.
And the Judge Newbery Award winner,
of course,
for Children's Lit.
Yeah. They are going to be responsible for mailing out judge foils. They will get them from WotC and then disperse them amongst judges, which is true. But they also are going to be handling certification, which is kind of the big thing. And I know that a judge friend of ours compared it to like getting like an IT certification. So like if you don't understand how those work, there is like something called CompTIA, which is a organization that helps people helps facilitate people getting those certifications, like an A+ certification, Network Plus certification. So something akin to that to some degree.
I'm a part of a coaching body that like pays dues. And most of that's organizational as well. It's also been compared to like if you are an umpire or a referee, and like you're part of a national organization for that, for accreditation. Like most of those organizations have dues. Mm-hmm. They offer you certifications that you wouldn't otherwise be able to get, which offers you legitimacy, just like any of those other setups. So,
correct. And you do mention dues. There are going to be dues for this organization as well, varying levels, I believe. There are still going to be what do they call them?
Rules advisors.
Rules advisors, which is either a free title or $50, which would allow you to gain access to some of the learning. Things that they will have on there to get you ready for certification for like a level one. From what I understand, a level one judge would have to pay $100 a year. A level two judge, is it 200 or 300?
200.
200, and then a level three judge is 400. Now with that, you do get a consummate amount. Consummate, is that the right word?
Consummate is perfect, so no.
You get a certain amount of foils depending on your level. For a rules advisor, they do not get judge foils. For level one, you get one of each two times a year.
You get four, right? Four for each way. Like on the first level, that's like four, then eight, then like 32. Like it's like a yearly total or something like that.
Level one gets a mailing of four twice a year. Level two gets two mailings of four twice a year. And level three gets four mailings of four twice a year.
Yeah, okay. So if you couldn't hear Justin there, so yeah, it's two mailings of four and then four mailings of four, or no. One, two, four. So you get a lot of foils.
Correct.
Ostensibly.
And that's kind of the going forward, there won't be an exemplar program that they have right now that's actually...
Well, it's suspended. I won't say there won't be an exemplar program. But
so it is on a hiatus currently.
There's secondary problems for why that was going on hiatus anyways. Yeah. But yes, it is gone currently.
There is a lot of information about this that's going around. They have a FAQ on their website. They have a Twitter account, which I do suggest following if this is something that's going to be interesting you going forward. They did an Ask Me Anything on Reddit. Now, obviously, there have been a lot of opinions about this entire thing happening that maybe some bad actors are trying to purposely really be negative about this and attack it. And purposely try to be disingenuous, which a few of the judge people that we have talked to and reached out to have said. So take anything that you read from that with a grain of salt. Obviously, the answers from the Judge Academy are genuine. But just know that there are those things in play with this. This is obviously a massive change to kind of how this is being run. And a lot of people feel a lot of different ways about it, to be perfectly honest. And, there's a lot of questions. I think, like, it's one of those things that it's hard. It's hard for me to really have an opinion on it, to be honest. And to be, like, really, like, solidified in an opinion, if that makes any sense. Like, I'm just not close enough to it to be able to formulate anything valid, in my opinion.
Yeah, so like I said, we reached out to a judge friend of ours specifically, and I thought it was fairly interesting. He was going to give us his thoughts on it, and he ended up writing us a small book, which was pretty interesting. And overall, he seemed pretty positive of it. He's pretty ingrained, in the system. And there's some things that I agreed with him on, and some things I didn't agree with. I think overall the dues process, like, just having been a part of other organizations for that, I know some people have like made a union comparison. I would say very strongly it's not that, because you're not getting any sort of like job placement or protection from this. Like,
yeah,
if you're a bad judge, they're not doing anything for you.
Right.
It's not all doom and gloom, and you could probably, even as like an L1, more than make that money back on your foils if you want to. I'm not saying that should be the purpose, but you can. I know some of those people you said who were maybe bad actors are really frustrated with them not being very transparent with the way the money's being spent. And to some amount, I do agree there. Most dues-paying organizations actually do offer a lot of insight into how they spend their money, because they take so much money from their dues. But it's possible that because of whatever this contract is with WOTC very much doesn't want you to see how much they're paying for these foils or anything else. And I think it's that agreement which leaves me the most frustrated by all of this, is that, like, WOTC wants to wash their hands of this because of the lawsuits that were filed a couple years ago. But they also, like, ostensibly need people to judge their game. And compared to other games, as our judge friend said, like, the judging for Magic is a much higher prestige and tier level. Like, the average person judging an event, you could expect to be competent compared to, honestly, the high level of cheating that goes on in other major games, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, what have you. And I think that, like, WOTC trying to pretend like that's not important, while at the same time acknowledging it is such a weird, it's such a weird area to, like, plant your feet as an organization. Like, hey, you guys are really important. Not important enough to do any sort of legal commitment here, except for this kind of backdoor handshake, but yeah, I don't know. Like, that is weird to me. And I think that's the point of criticism I can see the most, where ostensibly, as has been said multiple times, that agreement is the only thing that separates, like, the Judge Academy from you and I starting up, Uncle Buck's, Judge Academy for winners, right? Like, because, like, why couldn't we? Like, what, that certification is, you know, I think, which was really, really cut and dry before, becomes maybe less cut and dry now. You know what I mean? And I'll, Justin, maybe you know. This is one thing I don't know. Is Judge App still remaining?
It's up for now. Come October, when the existing program, you know, goes away, I foresee it being either reduced or going away. But the records that they have on there, as far as judge levels and their activity and events you've done, and reviews and whatnot, I have to imagine that'll either be transferred or saved by someone.
As maybe archived by the Judge Academy. Morgan, do I have to repeat a lot of that? Do you think they...
So as far as I know, Joel, just said it's up currently, and as far as what I know from what the Judge Academy said in their FAQ is that it's not going away. It might exchange hands as to who is monitoring it or what have you. I'm not sure, but I don't think it's going away because that's currently how you...
That's how you staff.
Yeah, correct.
But so here's the thing, though. The Judge Academy won't be associated with that at all, right?
I don't so know. That's something they do cover in the
right.
The fact, though.
Well, but they said that they are not part of staffing. That is something they explicitly said.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting what might come of that. I think that, like, so like our friend we reached out to, again, was pretty positive on it, but also felt that, like, they're in a position in their life where they could also just walk away if it's bad because of, like, other things in their life. And I don't know if that's ultimately true, especially for, like, the younger judges who spend a lot of time traveling and this sort of that. Like, I could see this being pretty frustrating. I know that there was also some frustration expressed with, again, like, the leadership board and the regional coordinators, because a lot of people felt like it was... It looks a little bit stacked towards people who've been around longer. And that's not necessarily wrong. Like, you know, like, if someone's going to create, like, a Judge Academy, I don't want, like, well, we kind of know what judges are, let's do this. But at the same time, like, one of the biggest criticisms, like, I know that I've had against, like, some of the issues in the judge program in general has been the sort of favoritism that happens with staffing. Like, it can be very hard to break into these things because people like their people and they get used to their teams and they know this and that. So, I think there's some frustration with that as well, because, you know, if you don't trust these people, then you're not going to feel represented by them anyways.
Correct. Sorry, I'm just looking through the FAQ and see if I could find anything about the judge apps.
Cause yeah, I'm certainly not, like, quoting, but they definitely said they were not handling staffing. So I would assume
correct.
That means they're not going to be handling judge apps. So, but I feel like if you're invested in the judge program, like, this, you know, this probably doesn't change too much for you. I will say that, like, you know, if you're L1, L2, you have about a month or so. Some people might not have that extra money to scrape together immediately, which is awkward.
Right.
But again, like, it's not necessarily different than other situations like that. However, like there's plenty of things where, like, if I want to go be a, you know, a high school baseball umpire, well, great, you're probably gonna have to join some sort of umpire academy, quote unquote, for your accreditation. That's just how accreditations work, and, like, that's how the legitimacy is brought. Unfortunately, this is a pretty quick change for those people. So, again, we know that there was a sort of October deadline that had to be reached, and I'm assuming if you're a judge, you're probably breathing a sigh of relief knowing that something is still in existence, but I don't blame anybody for looking at the Judge Academy, like, FAQ, and being like, you know what, no, this isn't for me, and I'm done. But I also think that, like, the people on that AMA who were like, you know, oh, well, we're just not going to have judges anymore, I think that's wildly incorrect as well. Does this mean less judges overall? I wouldn't be surprised. Like,
yeah.
I just wouldn't. But I don't know if you've been paying attention to competitive magic. We might not meet as many judges. So
I mean, that's kind of true. Kind of true.
I mean, your MCQs don't even need a judge, technically.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't, by guidelines. So,
yep.
But, of course, nothing. That's where I have to get confused here, right? Because, like, WOTC, again, doesn't want to acknowledge that judges are, like, a necessary thing. So they can't have judges required for events? Is that true? Right? Because they're not employees. What is a judge? It's this mythical thing that they don't employ. So I don't know how any of this works.
Yeah, I'm not...
And again, maybe some of that is where some of that frustration from the people's reaction to this is. It's just like, okay, it's not, but it is, but it's not, but it is, but it's not.
Right. That can definitely be frustrating. No doubt about that.
I just want to say, we just passed a camper, and the brand was Trail Manor. You know what? That's a classic camper. Like, oh, welcome to Trail Manor.
to my Trail Manor.
So I'm going to write my sequel to Wuthering Heights. Trail Manor.
All right. So we did, on the previous episode, ask for some feedback about the new sort of Eldraine booster products that are going to be, Throne of Eldraine booster products that are going to be coming out. We did receive some feedback from our listeners, so thank you so much for doing so and taking the time out of your day to talk with us about it and everything like that.
Don't make it seem like we're desperate.
I mean, I just want to thank them. They took the time. No, I appreciate
it. That's true.
So one of our listeners kind of made the point of making it easier to access, these sort of premium cards, these beautiful cards, for things like Cube, and that has a sort of a lower threshold to entry. Making things like getting those foils easier to get, basically,
and,
to summarization.
And the comparison there being like two masterpieces, which were great.
Correct.
And like, though I say were great as far as like value, but the rarity and the price of them did not make them really attainable for the average player. Whereas, ostensibly, by opening a pack with 15 of these with dedicated slots, if you're looking for a specific one, you can get it either by buying the pack or getting access to the cards.
Correct.
I when discussing with this person, I still don't necessarily like. I'm excited. Like, we asked like who would want this, and I know that I was pretty down on them as a product. I guess I'll wait and see what the distribution looks like. You know, if it's the kind of thing where you have the person who wants to buy it gets to buy it because they want to put those cards in their cube, because they want those cards, then yeah, absolutely go for it. That's how that product should be. But I worry still by making them limited run. The boxes are confirmed to have 12 packs in a box.
Ugh.
I don't think those people, like this person who want to buy them and want the Zora, I don't think that's what's going to happen. And if it just bought out just like the Mythic Editions were because they're limited run, then I don't necessarily think that makes them less expensive or easier to get.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong, and I said maybe the model will work, but and I could just be jaded, but it just seems like a way for people to take advantage of these people who do want those cards. And don't get me wrong, I'll probably want some of those cards. You know, like if one of those cards is in Battle Box, I'm gonna go for the weird one. That's why I have the Ammon Kick Counterspell and Wrath of God in my Battle Box.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. I want to pimp things out too. We're all there, but the distribution model for it is still, I don't know. I value the opinion. I enjoyed Masterpieces because I felt like it made things fun. But I could also see you just being like, you know what? I know I'm going to open this pack and get some amount of the value that I want and see some of the cards I want.
Yeah, it's built in, which is nice. And again, I'm going to be with you on this one, where it's just like, if people can get it for reasonable prices and buy it from their local game store and have that experience, then great. But I just have a feeling that people are going to be buying these for double the price on eBay because someone's bought them all out.
Yeah, that's, I mean, one thing I'll point to for that is not Game Day, what was the other one? The weekly event where you can get special packs.
Sure, Showdown.
Showdown, thank you. You should go look on eBay. Showdown packs were not cheap. And a lot of people just either won them in bulk, which is not a thing, or just turned on and sold a bunch of them. And they didn't really get distributed the way they were supposed to. I think that's one of the reasons why some of that is shifting a little bit when you're getting these promo packs now as opposed to just those Showdown packs. Now, granted, that's always been true with like promos and things like that. There's always going to be those people who, instead of giving it out to their players, they turn around and sell a bunch of them. It worries me. I do also want to make mention, because a couple of people reached out about Brawl and being like, you mentioned as far as like gatekeeping, it wasn't what I was trying to do. I'm very excited that people are excited for Brawl, want to play Brawl. It's not going to make me like the card. It's not going to make me like the Signet. But I'm happy that I'm happy it exists if it's going to make the format exist. So I'll leave it at that.
Fair enough. And the last thing that we wanted to talk about here in the community was the Throne of Eldraine novel that's going to be coming out. It's going to be coming out as an ebook. It is called Throne of Eldraine, The Wildred Quest.
Is it Wildred or Wildred?
W-I-L-D-E-R-E-D.
Yeah, Wildred. Wildred?
Wildred.
Wildred.
By Kate Elliott. And Kate Elliott, you might remember that name. She was the author that penned the Nicobolas origin story, which a lot of people really liked from Corset 2019. So again, this is going to be an ebook. We are still getting like physical books for the Greg Weisman...
Well, at least one physical book, right?
Yeah.
The sequel to the Ravnica novel.
Correct. But this is pretty exciting, and this will actually be out before the set.
Yeah, I'm very happy about that. Can we just talk about how good that change is?
Yes.
I'm a person who enjoys these. I know some people are upset because this is seemingly replacing the weekly flavor stuff.
Sure.
But I enjoy reading a little longer narratives about these places, and I really like as much as I didn't really like Theros. Like, I enjoyed Godsend a lot, which was this ebook model. So I'm okay with this. Hopefully, they'll still give some flavor bits on the website a little bit.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
It's an interesting title.
It is an interesting title, and so, it's going to be out on September 4th when it releases.
Good. So I look forward to reading it and like. Then being excited when I'm like, I like reading it and then going, ooh, I wonder what this will look like on a card. And then be like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool.
Yeah. So. All right. So before we talk about our competitive side of things, I do want to give a quick shout out to our lovely sponsor, Comic Town. You can find them out. You can find them at World.
You can find out all about it.
You can find out about all the things that they offer at worldcomictown.com. Again, upcoming events. I know that there is, and I'm looking it up right now, there's going to be a event on August 10th for, it's an IQ. And I'm trying to find out the details of it here.
Don't forget, they have their anniversary event on August 17th.
Yeah, I'm looking that up too.
How many years, Justin? 25 years of Comic Town.
25
That's
whole
crazy.
Years. So, on August 10th, there's going to be a 1K Invitational Qualifier for Modern. So that'll be, starting at 12. So it'll be probably registration opens at 11. I imagine it'll be $30 to $35 to enter.
I'm enjoying all this guessing as we're trying to look at it. This is
$35
this is quality.
For entry. Now, this will be still before any sort
of this is a
ban and restricted announcement.
Pre-banning, so...
So, get yourself ready for that.
Yeah, it's going to be all Hogak all the time.
All the time. And then, yes, on August 17th, they are going to be having their 25th anniversary event number one. But you can find out more information about both those events by visiting worldofcomictown.com and also check out their comic book podcast, Black, White, and Red, all over.
I get it.
All right. So competitive, we're first going to talk here about... it's first of all going to be a lot of modern, and it's going to be summed up pretty succinctly and quickly. I don't know like how much we really want to dive into it, but modern's still in a bad place. As it stands, and we'll talk about some of the results of the tournaments that we watched. I think the one we could probably surprisingly go through the quickest is going to be Mythic Championship 4 at Barcelona. It was won by Terolf Severin, notably famous for Arena Boys, the video series he does with Riley Knight, and I couldn't be happier.
Riley Knight, like, getting to commentate some of his matches and barely containing his
excitement,
his like unbridled joy.
Yeah,
it's just man, it was great. Did you see when they had them all like standing before he won? They all had him like behind like the curtain area when he at the end of it. Like they're all like to go out and congratulate him. It was pretty great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's pretty great.
He defeated Alvaro Fernandez Torres in the finals. Terolf was playing Tron. Just mono green Tron.
He's the hero. I want you to understand where modern is right now.
He's the hero.
Like, oh, who's the hero that can defeat Hogak in every event? It's apparently mono green Tron. So that's exciting.
And he defeated Hardened Scales in the finals.
Okay. Can we talk about how did that deck make it to the finals?
I don't know.
Like, one of the...
Their boys get real big.
One of the top five decks in the format plays four main deck copies of Karn the Great Creator. And, like, this guy's like, I don't care.
Yeah. I don't know.
So 20% of the time, my deck may literally not be able to function, but the rest of the time, it's real good.
That's true. We also have Eldrazi Tron.
That's the one that plays the card creator.
Jund, Hogak, Jund again, Mono Red Phoenix, and then Urza Thopter Sword there in the finals. And I think a lot of the names that we do have here are still they're relatively unknown to me. But we do have Martin Mueller being one of the known names here in the top eight. We have a lot of decks that have got eight wins. And if you're looking at this via MTG Goldfish, after you reach out the top eight, it goes to the decks that have eight wins. And it's literally just Hogak, 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 Dredge, Hogak, Dredge, humans. And that's really unfortunately the takeaway that has really kind of swept across all modern tournaments that really happened, was that Hogak was a very powerful presence. Even I don't want to focus even on the Mythic Championship, to be perfectly honest, just the sheer fact that you have draft, you have a different portion of the tournament,
to be fair,
that does affect some of the top eight.
The top eight, yes, but we got undraft win rates, the Hogak decks were the far and above the best decks,
correct?
Without draft, it's not. Yeah, you're right. The top eight doesn't tell the whole story there. I do think what's interesting about the top eight, listening to the Arena Decklist cast, if you listen to that cast, Jerry Thompson played Jund.
Right.
And broke down his decision for Jund. And myself and other people on our Discord were I disagree with pretty much everything he's saying. But he definitely predicted two copies of Jund in the top eight and a copy or two of Mono Red Phoenix.
Yeah.
And even though he didn't do well and watching the format evolve, I had the Lin Swan in the Waterboy moment where he got told the score and he's like, that's not going to be it. And at the end of the game, he's looking up at the scoreboard oh no. how did this happen? So, yeah, good luck buying, I guess, Ren and Six ever for any reason.
Yeah, don't. I know the main enemy definitely is Hogak because there's a lot. Oh, there's so much of it just looking through here. So much. Ren and Six is just Deathrite Shaman, though, right?
Apparently. We should probably take a moment. Maybe we should make our own mini cast and just apologize for being wrong about Modern Horizons. Every card in that set's broken. I don't know what to tell you. Every single one's broken. It's just what it is.
Yeah.
Did you see the Open had the Open in the Classic had a bunch of copies of what's called Gruul Phoenix?
Yes.
Yeah, this is playing. I'm not going to play that deck because I'm not going to get Ren and Six. No. I'm just not.
Oh, I mean, the mana base is pretty expensive.
I'm actually fine on that. I have that. Nope, just don't have.
Ren and Six.
Don't have Ren and Six.
Yeah, you're not Ren and Six flooded.
No, unfortunately. So,
I don't know really what else to say about the Mythic Championship. To be honest,
I guess I want to give a little bit of credit to, as far as the production for it, sticking with Frank Karsten. Sometimes the announcers, especially when a Hogak deck would lose, they'd be like, see, it's this and that. But, Karsten never shied away, and they gave real numbers. They didn't try to pretend it wasn't a problem. You know what I mean? And we're going to see a banning. It's going to happen.
For sure.
It may just be Hogak, and we'll see about that. Maybe they'll finally be brave with the format. But there's a problem, and I felt like it was good. They never got, negative, and they shouldn't. That's not the place of coverage. But they also didn't pretend it wasn't a thing. You know what I mean? I'll especially mention Frank Karsten because, he's our numbers guy and he's the best. And I think that's important for them to have been there's a lot of Hogak.
Yeah.
So.
So next up we do have the GP. And I was trying to see if they actually gave numbers for the GP. And at the very least, I don't have a top eight.
Yeah, here's the thing. When I was looking at deck lists, putting stuff together for Gen Con, I forgot there was a GP because even MTG Goldfish didn't have a GP listed.
You were correct.
So I know that Andrea Mengucci didn't top eight.
He did not.
Which was a running storyline was if he was going to get his first GP top eight. So sorry for him.
Condolences. I think that's been probably the hardest thing with switching over to channel Fireball coverage and all that jazz.
Yeah.
Getting top eight stuff for the GPs is just abysmal. So I know that had a Esper control list that I did see, and some Jundlist. Jund was also popular there as well. I'm pulling up the information.
Yeah,
on
no,
it
it's
right
good.
Now.
I was just like figuring out how we should fill in the silence.
Yeah, you know, just talking awkwardly is perfectly fine.
Well, what I will make mention of one thing coming out of the MC, and we'll get to the open and stuff as well. But I will say, I really hope the WOTC takes a good look at this. You know, we can continue to harp about the whole like paper magic and what they're going to do. A lot of pros expressed their frustration with that this weekend, but also like the modern format in general got some really negative feedback from the people playing it. And there's just a lot, it seems like there's a lot of disruption, and I think that's kind of, I just hope the WOTC pays attention, both with the eye towards bannings and an eye towards some sort of announcement about, like, what's going on in the future. You have players like Christian Calcano, who's just a fan favorite, a pro, like, he's a pro favorite among pros, who he's not qualified for any more PTs. And he doesn't, you know, and he was, you know, he would have ostensibly been silver, but silver doesn't exist anymore, so who knows. Paul Rietzel is now off the train and has no idea what's going on going forward. You had people like Sam Black, like, expressing their hope that paper MCs continue to be a thing, because we don't know what next year looks like. We know that we're not going to have, like, MCQs here coming shortly, so
yeah,
that'd be interesting. We also had some people, like, switch... like content creators, like PV no longer is working for Channel Firewall, and apparently now works for Star City Games as a writer. And Mike Sigrist, who we don't know, he said he's taking the summer, according to Twitter, to try and figure some stuff out. But I don't know, maybe I'll sick Dave on him. Like, hey, go message your friend. And
I'm sure.
Scoop. We need that scoop.
We need a hot scoop. So I do have the top eight here. So we have Humans, Urza, Thopter Sword, Eldrazi Tron, Jund, Is It Phoenix, Esper Control, and then Jund again to round out the top eight. And then Hoagak. Bensek. Yeah, Bensek top eight with Hoagak.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, for Howie. Congrats to Bensek. Yeah. So I know Kohu were really pulling for him as sort of a
He's a crowd favorite, it were. So I did want to just talk about the Esper list real quick, just for some things that we're kind of seeing.
I have not seen it, so.
really, the splash isn't too bad. You know, you're playing, you're consummate. I don't want to say that word.
I don't know what word you're trying to say.
I don't know. So, it's stuck in my head.
Do you know why I know consummate so quickly?
What?
Because of Trogger the Burninator.
Oh, there you go.
Because of consummate V's. Consummate. Guy wouldn't know Majesty who came up bit him in the butt. I think it's bit him in the face, but whatever.
We have our, you know, Blacklands that we're playing. So we have like our Polluted Deltas, Watery Graves. We even have a Creeping Tar Pit sneaking in here.
I get it.
Because it's unblockable.
Yeah, and I got it.
And the standout card that we see is Kaya's Guile as sort of being a cool
you know,
card.
Is that list playing three copies?
Correct.
Okay, I did see this list.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So, and then Esper Charm as well. But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. We have some sideboard cards like Plague Engineer and Unmoored Ego showing up.
How many copies of Teferi was he running?
Which one?
Little Teferi.
Two.
Okay, because I remember that people were talking on Twitter, Little Teferi and Esper Charm, it's real sick.
It's dirty.
It's like, ooh, how many cards did you draw, Step? Yeah, get rid of them. They're gone now.
Goodbye.
So, yeah.
But, yeah, I think, like, that's an interesting take. You know, Blue-White has shown itself to be somewhat of a popular choice. You mentioned the Arena Decklist podcast. They were kind of torn between Jund and Blue-White as being, like, possible viable strategies for the MC, so it's kind of interesting to see. Esper still might have some discussion, especially with Kaya's Guile.
Kaya's Guile is definitely a spicy one for that. I know we're playing some Modern and Gen Con this weekend, and I have sleeved up Blue White and brought that with me. I'm just gonna run four rest in pieces all over the place. So
yeah, 100%.
So, but Kaya's Guile is a good look for that.
All right. The only other thing that I think people talked about Modern is like sort of this presence of Urza Thopter Sword. So it was a little bit at the MC. I know that I know that's what BBD played.
Yes.
Was an interesting Thopter Sword list, and obviously we see a top eight here with it. Are you worried that once, you know, Hoagak, and hopefully the card Hoagak just gets banned, with that gone, do you see these sort of Thopter Sword lists like becoming top dog or taking over?
When we first had the Bridge from Below banning, that's why I talked about it. I think that was a deck that certainly stood to gain. And even with Ho'Gak running around, it's still here. We there are some interesting lists, some four-color lists at the MC as well.
Yeah.
That could sort of combo out of nowhere. The four-color list I was playing Teferi. It was pretty interesting, little Teferi.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I think like it's legitimately, you know, it's something to worry about. That version is playing like Arkham's Astrolabe has become really important, and that mm-hmm. card, that what a common, like
it's warped,
destroyed,
it's warped,
popper.
Yeah. Like everything's an Astrolabe deck.
Now, granted, I definitely played enough popper to know that like more than half the decks I had built played four Prophetic Prism, so it's not like there wasn't already something like that.
Sure.
So, but one mana is a big difference, and Snowlands are important.
Yeah.
But I when I was looking at sideboard stuff this weekend for Blue White, I was like, oh man, like I wonder if Stony Silence is not a bad choice for this weekend because of like in my mind, like, you know, there is a deck. And then I realized that deck doesn't really care about Stony Silence.
Not as much as you
wanted to,
yeah.
Like yes, it turns off like the specific combo, but like Ursa still does its thing.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. You know, that deck is just trying to sometimes get out like a Snaring Bridge. Yeah, it still just does that too. Because your activated ability for getting that into play is literally on your goblin. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I think it's a deck you definitely have to watch. It's the nice thing I think that's, you know, that's keeping it in check right now is that as far as its combo element, it's held in check by things like Laydown of the Void and your Rest in Peace and stuff, just like everything else is. So, but like, man, if Ho'Gak is banned and you're not having people, you know, splashing as much graveyard hate, then yeah, I think that the deck's tough to beat.
Yeah.
So, good card, and instead of Urza, just in a good place. You know, if Jund is resurgent, your build is pretty important because, like, if you know, is it Phoenix and Jund and like Eldrazi Tron, you know, Lightning Bolt doesn't kill Urza.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just doesn't. And like we saw multiple times on the weekend, the interaction between like Liliana of the Veil and Urza is also not good for the Liliana of the Veil deck because it bringing a construct with it makes it really awkward.
Yeah.
So I think like it's a resilient card and it's a powerful deck. So I think they're gonna have to watch it. I think Shahar Shenhar was the one who mentioned like banning a card's cascading impact on the format.
Yeah.
Because he's like, well, if you ban Ho'Gak, then like maybe this. He suggested that maybe we had time for Ho'Gak to adjust the format. No. Multiple decks in the Pro Tour were playing the main deck, Leyline of the Void. And it was Aaron Forsyth who said that was okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What? In what world? In what world should
Listen,
we be doing that?
Listen, if you're just playing cards that are good against your opponent's deck.
Yes, yeah, cards in the expected meta. That means your expected meta is broken.
Correct.
Don't, like, okay, I gave credit to them for, like, for Frank Carson being straightforward and stuff. Aaron Forsythe actually deletes all that credit. Because that's just, it's so frustrating. We're just like, yeah, maybe it was a good call this weekend. I don't think people were suggesting it wasn't a good call this weekend. I think they're suggesting that, like, they don't want to play Magic in the format where that's a good call.
Yeah, like, I shouldn't have to make this call.
And here's the thing. It was a good call, and it still didn't stop them.
Nope.
At all.
They still did real good.
Yeah, like they were, again, they are the bulk of the 8-2 decks. They have the highest win percentage. It doesn't do anything. Now, granted, some of the decks that were playing main deck Lightline were also Ho'Gak decks because why not? Just like, yep. Just make them all kiss. but yeah, no, so I think like you've got to pay, like Watsi has to pay attention to that. And again, like in my perfect world, we'd see a bunch of bans all at once. You know what I mean? Just ban Ho'Gak, ban Faithless Looting, ban Mox Opal. Just get it all done and then let Modern fix itself.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
But we'll see.
We will see. That is for sure. All right. So moving on from Barcelona, let's talk about Columbus. So we, of course, had the Star City Games Columbus Open that happened. It was won by Dominic Harvey playing Mono Green Tron. So it was a good weekend for Tron, apparently, defeating Bobby Colgrove.
Yeah, you know, we haven't had our obligatory Bobby Colgrove shout-out in a
while.
That's
true. So. It's been some time. So, congrats and condolences. Unfortunately, you didn't quite get there.
A hearty Ho'Gak to you, sir.
A hearty Ho'Gak to you. Also, I gotta give a shout-out to...
What?
A shout-out, all right. A shout-out.
I'm getting a little blue back there, Morgan.
A shout-out to Riley Curran for getting ninth place.
For Riley Curran-ing himself, yes.
Yes, correct.
So, I'm sorry, but...
The rest of the top eight looks like this. We have Hogak at third place, Is It Phoenix in fourth, Hogak in fifth place, Monogreen Tron in sixth, Hogak in seventh place, and then Grixis Urza in eighth.
Yep, cool.
So this was a purely modern tournament, obviously, and we kind of see that Hogak's real good.
Yeah, weird. And again, the hero that can stop this menace is Tron.
Is Tron.
No.
Do you want that?
No.
Is that the format that you want?
No one wants that. Ever.
So, again, we just talked about Grixis Urza, but Harlan Fear played a list to an eighth place finish. And then we do have Is It Phoenix is another deck that can sometimes get there versus these Hogak decks.
Here's the thing, like, that matchup, I think, is pretty firmly in the Hogak side of it. I know some people are pushing back and forth, but Thing in the Ice does not do the amount of work you want it to do. Like, it's not like it's humans where you're resetting them. Most of their stuff, you know, if they have to, what, discard the hand size or something, okay, they just discard all their Venge Vines and, like, they're right back at it again. Yeah. With the white, you know, whatever, Reeboks.
With the white Vans.
Vans, that's what Daniel wore. Okay. Ah, damn. Anyways, but I don't think that matchup is very good at all for the Phoenix deck. And that blue-red, you know, Is a Phoenix does not have access to the same consistent graveyard hate. Now you're jamming, you know, a bunch of ley lines into that deck, and that's super clunky. You know, it's like, oh, well, you can cast them. You're dead on turn four. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
But, like, I think that, you know, Is a Phoenix is in a really weird place while Hogak's in the format. So
I agree.
It's unfortunate. They certainly have the draws, just like Hogak has the draws. But the problem is the Hogak does it more consistently.
Yeah.
So
we also have...
I want to point out, we keep saying the Hogak deck. Yes, there's differentiation between the Soul Tide and the Jundless.
They all do the same.
Yeah, thing. It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter. We all know what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Stop it.
Like, okay.
We also have Zan Sage showing up with a interesting build of Phoenix with Gruul Phoenix. This list is doing so by playing Renin 6. We already kind of talked about this, but this is where it actually shows up here in the tournament. I think, like, when you're looking at this versus Mono Red versus something like even not Phoenix, but the not Mastery, Prowess.
Yeah.
The Mono Red Prowess decks. I think, like, overall, maybe the Prowess decks might be a little bit faster than the Phoenix, so maybe that's where you may want to look if you're still wanting to play this style of deck. These kind of lists, and I've been genuinely surprised with how much the Mono Red list, the Mono Red Phoenix list, still sticks around and still, like, continues to see play. You would think that with the prevalence of, like, Is It Phoenix and that being a viable strategy, that people over time would just slowly drift over to that that style of play. I understand they're still different. Like, the Mono Red Phoenix deck is definitely somewhat different than blue red in your play styles.
I'll be honest, it's not somewhat different. It's drastically different.
Fair enough. I've never played the deck. So.
And like, it's kind of my deck du jour.
It's the other
deck I have sleeved up for this weekend. You know, the Blue Red Phoenix deck is definitely, like, you know, trying to be very, very consistent, right? Mm-hmm. But its consistency is at the cost of speed. Like, it's, you know, it can definitely flip, like, early things in the ice. It can have draws where it has multiple Phoenixes, but for the most part, it's not doing that as quickly. The Mono Red deck is definitely just trying to take advantage of huge turns very quickly, especially as they've more adapted into these prowess builds, you know, that has more one drops. You're trying to win the game quickly. I think the addition of Renin 6 is interesting, but it does slow it down a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But, I mean, having the ability to, like, bring back a land just to have, like, extra cards and discard eluding to make those better is powerful.
Yeah.
Was he playing any cycling lands in that list?
I don't believe so.
I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, if you start going that way, then, like,
Fiery. So he was playing, like, Horizon Lands.
Lands. I could see playing just like a Forgotten Cave. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no Forgotten Cave, but still we have a Fiery Islet and
Islet. Yes.
And then a Sunbaked Canyon.
Gotcha. And that's obviously good enough anyways, and being able to ping for one is good too, but yeah, you're definitely slower with Renin 6, but it does give you some longer outs maybe than you had before.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And he said that with the Mono Red list that he was playing, like, he felt like he was getting a little too flooded on things like Gutshot and Lava Dart.
100%.
So he's like, I wanted to play another card that had the same effect, but also gave me some sort of value, and that's where he stumbled across Brandon Six. So they did do a deck tech with his deck, so if you want to check out, you know, something that, you know, was actually covered in it, I do suggest that it's definitely full of a lot of good information about the particular list. If you happen to own Brandon Sixes and are Brandon Six flooded, you can put on your monocle and play this lovely deck.
Mully. I will say, like, I would need to see, maybe it was just a format, I would need to see some evidence that makes me want to keep playing that, the version with Ren and Six. Like, I just don't know about the speed, but I don't disagree with his point. You know, you do get to end up with, you know, sorry if I just touched the mic.
No, you're good.
I do end up with draws where you have too many ping effects and not enough gas with it, and that giving you a little bit something else to do is interesting. And, like, and it's a deck that wants to hit its land drops, but not have too many lands. And it's also a deck that wants to be able to flashback Lava Dart consistently, but still cast its spells. So Ren and Six makes a lot of sense from those, you know, when you look at those ideas, like those key points.
Sure. When we look at the Classic, to shift gears a little bit, it's the Modern Classic, and we do have Four Color Urza being the winner of the tournament here. I don't see any. There you go. So we have one Teferi Time Raveler here in the sideboard. I don't see any main deck. But this is the one that has, you know, both red for, actually just for Gear Per Aether Grid, is what your red slash is for. And then we have like wear and tear in the sideboard, and then your white is splash here is going to be for Teferi Time Raveler. And that's about it, yeah. On MTG Goldfish, they just have like the hardest time representing like a snow. It's like it says SNO and then a plane symbol. You're like, I don't have a little picture for this.
That's a cool tattoo. SNO plane symbol.
And then yeah, we have some interesting ones that are showing up. We have Amulet Titan in second place, and then humans.
And then... Stop the podcast. Not for real. Don't actually stop the podcast.
Okay, sorry.
SNO plane symbol?
Yeah.
That's Snow White.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't get that joke. I just went right over it.
No, it just cracked in my brain. It's Snow White.
Oh, I get it.
Oh, man.
That's great.
That actually is a good tattoo. Now somebody has to get it.
We dare you.
Like, you could be...
We as a podcast do not explicitly endorse getting a tattoo.
I'm Snow White.
Like I said, second place we have Amulet Titan, and then humans, then another mono green Tron here in fourth, and hilariously very very similar last name to someone we have in the car, but I'm assuming no relation.
No, they're good at Magic, so definitely not.
Oh wow, I guess.
Man, I have to assume enough. It's Justin's last name.
Yeah,
because it's mine. I just definitely like played myself.
We have a local player, Cody Napier, here showing up in fifth place playing Jund. We have Greg Dugan playing Dredge in sixth. Jonathan Aiken with Merfolk in seventh. And then Abraham Stein playing Gruul Phoenix in eighth. So a second showing for that deck. But, you know, with the classics, obviously, you see a little bit of difference. But yeah, technically, there is no Hogak in this top eight, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Technically. Even the Dredge list. I'll double check. Nope. Couldn't make
Hogak.
It out.
There it is.
Couldn't make it out. Take it back.
Oh,
this should be Hogak Dredge. What are you doing, Dunce?
You shouldn't open the last present. Should have just stopped there.
Just stopped there.
Got selfish. Got greedy.
The last thing that we should touch on here is the Standard Classic. And with the Standard metagame, honestly, I haven't seen it really fluctuate, to be honest. We have the winning list is Chris Anderson playing Bant Scapeshift, defeating Adam Martin and playing Jeskai Hero, which is kind of new. It is playing some wild cards. Okay, I forgot about this list.
Yeah, I shout out to Christian Kever, who is a player who's been trying to put something like this together. I don't know if they know each other or whatever else, but that's who I thought of.
That's true.
Yeah.
100%. And like this list is wild. So obviously we have the Hero Precinct 1, but we have Lightning Stormkin. We have Tomic Distinguished Advocate, Imperial Eagle, Feather, Tajik, Aurelia, Elite Guard Mage, Shalai, Lyra Dawnbringer as the creature suite. That is a lot. And then we have Planeswalkers. We have three Teferi, Time Raveler, one Teferi Hero, Dominaria. For spells, we have Justice Strike, Deafening Clarion, and Depose, Deploy. Then we have Jeskai lands, and then some interesting ones on the sideboard. We have like Settle the Wreckage showing up here, which is pretty much falling out of favor. Chandra, Wicked Inferno, Legion War Boss, Deputy of Detention, Tikatli Honor Guard, and Aether Gust.
Nice.
So a pretty interesting list. This isn't a list that's going to take advantage of your Jeskai Legend. You need a lot of spells for that one. This is definitely a creature deck. But certainly showing that like Hero Precinct 1 is more than just like Esper. Like, you can kind of you broaden your horizons with that card. I know that there were like Mardu lists that were around for a while, and I think it's really unfortunate that the Kalia that we got just doesn't like
do anything.
Unfortunately, doesn't really, because I think that would have been like an interesting thing to like people try to build around.
I mean, you could play like Hero Kalia Aurelia.
Yeah, and Boros Feather and
like Feather, like you could do that if you wanted to.
I don't know if that'd be as good.
I don't know either, but you could.
You could.
Yeah, I want to make mention like Settle the Wreckage does not feel good to me right now. Like,
yeah, it's just like a weird thing to have there.
You settle your opponent's zombies, and then they go put lands into play
and get more zombies.
And get more zombies. I mean, they can only do it so many times.
True.
So maybe that's it, but it does not feel great to me. The only thing I know about the top 16, because again, I'm driving and not looking at my phone and these lists because I am a good person. Maybe. Shout out to Bob Cole, who was 14th, correct?
No.
12th?
No. Clay Spookelmeyer was 12th.
Wait, what? Who? Bob is in the top 16. Or was he in Modern? Go back to the Modern Classic.
Go back to the Modern Classic.
I take it back. I might have been Modern. Not feel bad. Well, congrats to Clay as well. Indianapolis just killing it.
Just wrecking it. Clearly driving into the
the belly of the beast.
The belly of the beast. The trap. The trap, as it were.
Check the classic. I'm not kidding. I
am going back. Okay. It just takes time.
Why?
It's not instantaneous.
Why?
Right? Anyway, let's see. Modern Classic. And yeah. Bob Cole. Playing Hogak.
Okay, well, never mind. I take it all back. But I believe he just joined a new team, and I cannot remember the name off the top of my head. But I believe he and a couple members had a pretty good showing for the first weekend as a new team. So,
well, fantastic. That's good to hear.
Guy who really pours his heart and soul into his testing is a quality guy. So.
Again, going back to Standard here real quick, we just see a lot of what we typically see. Again, the Jeskai Hero list was the most sort of groundbreaking or interesting list. Everything else is stuff we've seen before, whether it be Mono Red, Jund Dinosaurs, Orza Vampires, Bant Scapeshift, Esper, or Teemer Elementals, which is a lot of different things you could be playing in Standard. So I think that's
How you definitely read over a list that includes Jund Dinosaurs as old hat. Like, it amazes me. It took them the entirety of their time in Standard, but they finally found their zombie brethren and became playable.
What a wild world.
Here's the thing. People for some reason, like, and there are some things in the Standard you can be frustrated about. The ramp strategies have been consistently very, very good. But people also aren't building their decks to beat those things. But I think, like, cards in most Standards wouldn't be playable. You look at, like, Rotting Regisaur, like, as top-aiding events. You can kind of play whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and just cards, I mean, some of the cards in that Jeskai Hero deck that took second place are just, like, buck wild, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that you just have to, you have to sort of appreciate where Standard is at. You're going into a large rotation. Like, they really nailed this format, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe War of the Spark's an outlier if you still don't like all the million planeswalkers.
Yeah.
There's problem cards. You know,
I could see Teferi. People being a little frustrated for sure.
But even like the plan of just playing all the Teferis has not been super great since N20.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
Cool format. I mean, every card. It feels like every card's been relevant. Like, Scapeshift just coming out of nowhere to just like, do some things in Standard. I think it's cool. So
yeah, I agree with that. But I think it's going to be everything we have for competitive. Now, one thing that you did mention, that Sam Black recently tweeted out about his worry about Paper Magic sort of fading.
Yes.
He had an interesting statement, and I kind of just wanted to get your opinion on it. He said that he believes that Magic is the best paper game. but not the, but can't be, it could be the best paper game, but can't be the best video game. I think that was an interesting way to look at it, because Mike, you and I both obviously play video games, where we're pretty big nerds, and we like to do a lot of different types of gaming.
Yeah, I like a lot of video games.
And it was just like, I just never thought of it, you know, that way. When I say like Magic is like the best game, you know, I guess I don't really like have a line drawn, because I don't know. It's such an interesting way to think about it. And I don't know if that's the way that you kind of conceptualize it, or if you had any like good thoughts or insights into that opinion, because I thought it was kind of interesting to think about.
I really do like that opinion, and I think that like, you could argue semantics here, like what do you even define as a video game? Like, is it just any digital program where you can play a game? Then yeah. Like, sure, then like, yes.
This is obviously in drawing comparisons to Arena, you know, or Magic
sure.
Online even, but probably mostly like, Arena.
Here's the thing, would you call Magic Online a video game? Yeah, that's interesting. Would you call Arena a video game?
I think Arena's closer.
I do agree with that as well, but they're technically the same game.
Yeah.
So again, I think there's semantics there, but no, I really do agree with his point. You know, he and a couple other pros really pushing that concept of like the gathering.
Yes.
And you know, Paper Magic, I think there's just so many things that are, wait for it, lost in the shuffle.
Uh-huh.
When you play, you know, digital versus paper, you know, paper is there is something about playing in this, you know, even like a tournament setting where you have people around you, or even just like with a group of friends. There's some legitimacy that changes, like when you need to get out of your house and go and do something versus like, yeah, I'm going to qualify for the PT in my underwear.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, people do it. I don't want to tell you. I think that like, there is, again, there's just something lost when you just watch it. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. And there are some streamers that spoke out and said that like, they feel like they either have a strong sense of community or have cultivated a strong sense of community. And I don't disagree with them. But I think, like, I don't know. I when I think of Magic, I'm never going to think first of the digital entries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like, not going to be... Now, do you think, like... Do you think that's different for people whose entry point was Arena?
You know, I don't know. I will say that in my job, I have come across some people who... Arena was their first entry point now in the last year. And all what that's done, and what we've seen... You know, Hasbro even said this... It's pushed them to Paper Magic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a true statement.
And I think that, you know, when you look at that, like, that's really good. And that does speak to Arena being a quality product. But I think it's important, you know, and again, as you said, like, Hasbro having recognized this, like, there's a reason it pushes people to the paper game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That there's so many, again, there's so many little things. Like, I was noticing at the, you know, when I was playing, I was drafting a fair amount this week because I'm going to play some M20 sealed this weekend, and I just want to get a feel for cards in the format, right? You know, losing flavor text on Arena is real upsetting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just don't... I don't know. And, like, Arena's pushing really hard now on, like, basic land selection. Like, that's their big push for microtransactions. I actually completed the, Planecation event just to get the forest, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like... Man, that's something that you can do in Paper Magic that's really hard to do digitally. Like, I want to show off like the lands that I like. These represent me. This art appeals to me. This artist speaks to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, things like even like the art themselves. Like, now granted, I guess some of the extension, you know, arts and Arena help with this, but like there's just something, I don't know, there's something different about the paper game, and maybe I'm romanticizing it because like there's a nostalgia factor for me, and that's just how I know it. You know, I'm sure there are people who they only play Arena and they have no interest in like owning physical things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or they don't have the ability to like there's not an LGS and like whatever else, or there's not someone to play with. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I think Mirror's getting too long winded here. I agree with his statements. And I think like WotC's own data agrees with that statement.
Yeah. And, like, I just thought it was interesting to be, like, that Arena and Magic itself couldn't compete with just, like, other, like, video game entities, you know what I mean? And I guess that makes sense to some degree. Like, it's hard to say, like, is Magic better than something like Fortnite? in certain terms, you know what I mean? It's hard to, it feels like a comparison of two things that are just too hard to compare.
Maybe I agree with that. Like, there's an element of, like, you are isolated, mm-hmm. and you are playing this, you know, just like anything, you're playing against an opponent. But I don't know. It feels, as an esport, it feels different. You know what I mean? I think about, sure. like, you know, I was watching some Overwatch League, actually. Yeah. You know what I mean? And there's a different feel to it. You know, not just like it being a game, but it being something that you're coordinating with people with. You know, I don't know. Magic just doesn't have that element. You know, even watching someone stream is fine. It's never been my preferred way to enjoy Magic, and I don't seek out streamers. Like, I don't. It is, if I am looking for Magic entertainment, it is the last form for me. And it's just because, like, I like, you know, I think commentary on somebody else playing is drastically different than, like, streaming to me.
Sure.
Because, like, I like watching it and figuring stuff out, and I don't necessarily always want to hear that person, if that makes sense. And maybe that's weird, but I don't know. It's not engaging to me the same way something else is. But, like, when you've introduced me to things like, you know, Summer Games Done Quick, yeah, I watched somebody play an entire 6-hour run of Chrono Trigger. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's engaging.
And I think it's engaging in a way that just, like, singleton Magic streaming isn't to me. And I don't think I'm the prototypical consumer for that, but it makes me agree with Sam Black.
Fair enough. Like I said, I just thought it was, like, something that struck me, and I was like, made me think. So I thought it was a good thing to talk about.
I will say something else, you know, speaking to something else to Sam's point, I don't want us to go too long. I know we need to wrap up, but I have noticed that, Arena, just like Magic Online, feeds something for me competitively that, like, Magic is what I look to for that, which is, like, I like to be competitive, yeah. so I like doing well, but, like, Arena also feeds, like, the worst, like, Arena Magic Online both feed the worst instincts of myself as a player. Like, when I'm just, like, sitting alone in my office and, like, things that tilt me off, like, I tilt, like, so I don't do that in public. You know what I mean? Like, because I don't feel like there's a constraint there. I just get angry.
Yeah, you can get angry. You can get ridiculously angry in the privacy of your own home.
I think it puts me it has put me in bad moods enough that, like, I've taken, like, week-long breaks from, like, Arena. You know what I mean? No. But, like, I don't experience that 9 times out of 10 playing, like, Paper Magic, because my brain does not see that as acceptable, I guess. I'm not really sure there, but it's something that is interesting to me.
I imagine it's, like, a weird sociological thing, right?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it is.
So, I guess that makes sense.
Like, I'm sure, like, you could look into it and be like, part of it is definitely being, like, expectant. Like, yeah, I'm good. I should win this, which is, like, a horrible way to view anything, but, like, I don't have a person to associate with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just...
Like, I don't sit across from any opponent in a tournament and think, like, oh, I'm better than this person, because I don't think that way. But on Magic, like, on a digital platform, it comes into my head a lot. Like, it's really easy to criticize small plays and then lose and be like, well, that... And I just... Yeah, I don't like it. It puts me in bad places.
That's rough.
So...
All right, well, I think it's going to be everything for us. We are obviously still... on our way to Indianapolis, driving down I-70. It's long.
Yeah, we still got another hour here.
Long.
Well, 40 minutes.
All right, fair enough. We appreciate you listening for this week. If you're wanting to reach out to us, you can. You can do so via various mediums. We have a Twitter account. It's YourNStep, and when you add us, it's @YourNStep.
I get it.
We have a Facebook, facebook.com/@YourNStep. And we also have email. @yournstep@gmail.com.
There you go.
Sorry. If you're listening to us via a podcast app that lets you leave a rating or review, we would appreciate it. We really feel that we're a 5-star podcast. If you're listening to us via Legit MTG, thank you so much for picking up the show. Check out some of the other articles they have in their online store. And if you're listening to us via MTGcast, welcome back. We're glad to be back, and hopefully you'll be seeing all of our episodes here going forward. I want to give a quick shout-out to our lovely sponsor, Comic Town. You can check them out at worldofcomictown.com. And, of course, to our patrons, thank you again so much for contributing to the show. You let us get new equipment like these lav mics that we have right now, which have allowed us to very easily record this podcast and not have it sound like pure garbage. Well, at least audio quality.
What we said might still be pure garbage,
but you're along for the ride, so.
If you're gotten to this point, you can't give it back.
You can't. No refund on time, bud.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. We're in your brain forever.
Forever. So yeah, thank you again so much to our lovely patrons, and we will catch you next time. You have a great one. Bye.